The following is a home program on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 2, text number 40, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on December 20th, 2009, in Sydney, Australia.
So, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for your participation in this Krishna consciousness movement. Why is it called a movement? Well, there's many reasons it's called a movement. One reason is it's moving. It's not static, it's ecstatic. So where is it moving? It's moving all of its members back to the spiritual world, that land where life is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. So if you're tired of temporality, ignorance, and misery, then participating in the Hare Krishna movement is the most intelligent decision you ever made in your whole life. Because this movement, by the mercy of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta, Sri Nandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada, this movement means back to home, back to Godhead. For those who seriously follow it. Even those who are not serious, they are making progress. Anyone who comes in contact with this movement in any way, they make progress towards the supreme perfection. But those who adopt its principles seriously, at the end of this lifetime, back to home, back to Godhead. So tonight, we are studying one of the most sublime verses. I was very happy when I was given this assignment. Chapter number 2, text number 40. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Neha Bikramana Shosti. Pratyavayo Navidyate. Svalpamapyasya Dharmasya. Trayate Mahatobayat. In this endeavor, there is no loss or diminution, and even a little bit of advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear, by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Activity in Krishna consciousness, or acting for the benefit of Krishna, without expectation of sense gratification. Well, there's a very nice definition of what it means, Krishna consciousness. In a nice little nutshell given by Prabhupada. What is Krishna consciousness? To act for the benefit of Krishna without expectation of sense gratification. Continuing, is the highest transcendental quality of work. Even a small beginning of such activity finds no impediment, nor can that small beginning be lost at any stage. Any work begun on the material plane has to be completed, otherwise the whole attempt becomes a failure. It's like you're working for a degree, you know, trying to earn that BS degree, you know. And you get to the last semester and something happens, you just lose your enthusiasm, you drop out, and you go to the employers and you say, look, I've completed all the courses except, actually, I was one course short. I'm sorry, you know, either you have a bachelor's degree or you don't. We don't care that you did, you know, 99% of the courses. You don't have a degree, you're out, we don't want you, is it? In the material life, it's pretty tough like that. You know? If you don't make the grade, you're on the street. You see? But in Krishna consciousness, it's quite different. We'll continue reading. But any work begun in Krishna consciousness has a permanent effect, even though not finished. The performer of such work is therefore not at a loss, even if his work in Krishna consciousness is incomplete. 1% done in Krishna consciousness means bears permanent results, so that in the next beginning it is from the point of 2%, whereas in material activity without 100% success there is no profit. That's wonderful. Even if you're only able to advance 1% in Krishna consciousness, you got a heart so full of material desires, I mean, you could practically do nothing about it except make 1% advancement in Krishna consciousness. And then you still got 99% lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy. Your heart is full of that horrible dirt. With a little tiny dot of Krishna consciousness somehow got in there along with all the dirt, see? Are you nowhere? No, you're not nowhere. Because that 1% of Krishna consciousness is your eternal essence. In your next lifetime, you're ahead of where you were. You got now you're 1% Krishna conscious. That's eternally, you've achieved that eternal position. You have eternal elite status, you see. 1% Krishna conscious. So, in this way, even if you can just make 1% Krishna consciousness in your lifetime, and you do that each life, in 100 lifetimes you'll be a pure devotee. You may say, but that's so long to wait, 100 lifetimes. But you know something? You know how long we've been in this material existence? 100 lifetimes is like that. It's not that considered from the broad perspective. Even 100 lifetimes of struggling to become a devotee is not the greatest. It's not the most unbearable amount of time to wait. Some devotees really have this vision. There was one devotee in our Lord Chaitanya's movement. His name was Mukundada. During the era of Lord Chaitanya, during his time. This Mukundadutt, he was a very good musician. I mean, he could really sing. He could make the rocks melt. He could really sing. You would just be ecstatic to hear his voice. He had so beautiful voice, you know. But he had one bad habit. He liked to sing with the Mayavadis also. Oh. Lord Chaitanya heard about it. The Mukundadutt, he sings with us and he also sings with the Mayavadis. Lord Chaitanya was very heavy. He said he's banned from our association. Everyone loved Mukundadutt. They didn't know what to do. They didn't know how to break the news to him. I mean, it was heavy, you know. Who wants to tell you are banned now from the Krishna consciousness movement? Who wants to be the one that gives the bad news to their dear friend? But they told him, and I mean, he was devastated. It was worse than being thrown off a cliff. I mean, it was horrible, you know. And he was practically dead. I mean, he practically left his body when he heard him. He practically left his body. He was just barely hanging on to his life. And it was horrible. I mean, it was the most pitiable scene you could ever imagine. The devotees went back to Lord Chaitanya and they begged mercy. You know, I mean, it was just tearing them apart to see their fellow Vaishnava completely, at the end of his life practically. They went back and they said, Lord Chaitanya, please, you have to have mercy. He's practically leaving his body, Lord Chaitanya. Please let him back. Please. Lord Chaitanya said, he was very firm. He said, I will not let him back for 1,000 births. He was very heavy. And the devotees, all the devotees were completely devastated. And they thought, they were just so devastated. Anyway, they think we have to tell him what the word was. We went on his behalf to petition, and now we have to give him the horrible news. They thought, oh, surely he will leave his body completely now if he hears it. Not for 1,000 births. So they went back and they said, Mukundadat, we don't know how to tell you, but Lord Chaitanya said he will not allow you back for 1,000 births. 1,000 births! Haribol! Haribol! He was dancing in ecstasy. In 1,000 births, I will see my Lord. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, Ram. He was so happy. He was dancing in ecstasy, jumping and singing and crying in ecstasy. And the devotees went back to Lord Chaitanya and said, Lord Chaitanya, the most amazing thing happened. When we told him 1,000 births, he started dancing in ecstasy. Lord Chaitanya said, let him come right now then. So, you see, even if you were able to, you know, make 1% and had to do it for 100 lifetimes, it's not that big of a deal. You see. Krishna consciousness is so powerful that, you know, even if you just inch your way back to Godhead, you see, you're going to make it. You'll make it. Even if you're not a big devotional Maharati, you know, just a little pipsqueak like me, you see, you can make it. Everyone can make it. You just got to have that desire. I want to go back to Godhead. I want to see Krishna. I want to be, to revive my eternal identity. So let's see. Ajamil performed his duty in some percentage of Krishna consciousness. But the result was, he enjoyed at the end, was 100% by the grace of the Lord. There is a nice verse in this connection in the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.17. Chaktvasvadaramanchanaram bhujer harer, bhajanapakyo tat patet tato yadi, yatraka vabhadram abuddhamusha king, kovarata apto bhajatang svadharmataha. If someone gives up his occupational duties and works in Krishna consciousness, and then falls down on account of not completing his work, what loss is there on his part? And what can be done, and what can one gain if one performs his material activities perfectly? Or as the Christians say, what profiteth a man if he gain the whole world but suffers the loss of his immortal soul? The Beatles actually put that in one of their songs also. What, see, all the money you made will not buy back your soul. Same idea. Material activities and their results end with the body. But work in Krishna consciousness carries a person again to Krishna consciousness, even after the loss of the body. At least one is sure to have a chance in the next life of being born again as a human being, either in the family of a great cultured Brahmin or in a rich aristocratic family that will give one a further chance for elevation. That is the unique quality of work done in Krishna consciousness. So, our attempt is to go back to home, back to Godhead in this lifetime. But it's not automatic. Sometimes we have a sentiment whenever a devotee leaves the body, well, he went back to Godhead. It's a nice sentiment, but Prabhupada is talking about here. You know, you may not. And even when Jayananda, who was the great grandfather of our Ratha Yatras, went back, Prabhupada said that he could have gone to the heavenly planet. But he said, because he left his body during Kirtan, therefore Prabhupada certified that he had gone back to Goloka Vrindavan. But he was a very advanced devotee. Very, very bad. So the point is, even if someone doesn't go back to Godhead, the fact that they had dedicated themselves in Krishna, to advance in Krishna consciousness means their position is glorious. They will get a very good position in a rich family or a Brahmin family or in the heavenly planets, they will get a very, very good opportunity to advance in Krishna consciousness. So, it's the greatest investment you could ever make, you know. It's the best life insurance you could ever take out. Best life insurance policy. You know, take up Krishna consciousness. There's no better life insurance policy you could ever take. Because you're guaranteed to go back to Godhead, either in, you know, in this lifetime or a future lifetime. If you're not quite completely pure, complete purification is required. Krishna doesn't want mixed devotees. The pure ones, the completely pure devotees, go back to Godhead. Those who are absolutely pure, pure devotees. Those who are not, they're not in a bad position either. They get a very good opportunity in their next life to continue with the process of Krishna consciousness. So either way, you're in good shape. You're sitting pretty, as we say in America, you're sitting pretty. Either way, you're sitting pretty. With Krishna in the spiritual world, you're in a very good position in the material world, you see, to practice Krishna consciousness in your next life. So this is very, very special and wonderful thing, this Krishna consciousness movement, because it's giving everyone the opportunity to enjoy the greatest benefits that can be enjoyed. You see, even the demigods in heaven cannot enjoy such benefits unless they also take to Krishna consciousness. There's no material facilities which can rival the auspiciousness of these facilities. So the nice thing is, it doesn't matter what your karma is. You know, some of us have the karma to be poor people. Some of us middle, some of us middle class, some of us rich. Like my godbrother Ambarish Prabhu. His karma was to be a multi-billionaire. He was born the great-grandson of Henry Ford, the Ford automobile, you see. Of all the companies that went had to be bailed out in the U.S., Ford Motor didn't have to be bailed out. The other in this financial crisis. So Ford Motor Company is a very strong company. So he's one of the Ford family. You see, one can have such karma, and you use that for Krishna. He's taking big responsibility for building our temple in Mayapur. That Prabhupada wants the big temple in Mayapur, temple of understanding. He's working very hard for Prabhupada's mission with his whatever talent, whatever facilities he has. He's working very hard. So it doesn't matter how much you have, whether you have a little, whether you're a Hanuman who can throw boulders of big, huge boulders into the Indian Ocean to build Ram's bridge, or a little spider who can just brush a little dust. Doesn't matter, you see. You know that Hanuman, when he saw the little spider trying to help out by brushing the dust, he said, "What are you doing? You're getting in the way. Come on. You nothing, get out of here." Lord Ram Jash says, "Hanuman, that's nonsense. What are you saying to that spider?" He says, "His service is as good as your service." You see. Krishna doesn't see the quantity, he sees the mood. He sees the mood. So all you really have to, even if you're not a great talented person with so many opulences and potencies, it doesn't matter. All you have to have is sincerity. Sincere desire to please Krishna. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta priyachati tadahang bhakya paharitam mashnami prayatatmanaha. Krishna says, if you will offer me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, a fruit or water, I will accept it. You may not have the billions of dollars of Ambarish Prabhu to use in Krishna's service, but you may all have, all you can do is get a cup of water and a tulsi leaf and a little flower. If you offer that with love and devotion, then Krishna sees your service as this is good. Of course, that doesn't mean as you're a multi-billionaire, you just offer a, you know, leaf, flower, fruit, or water. Krishna doesn't see what you give, he sees what you hold back. Prabhupada one time said, don't try to cheat Krishna, you see. If you're a multi-billionaire, then you better give a lot. Huge donation. Whatever you have, sincerely engage it, that's the point. Don't hold back for your own sense gratification. Engage your entire life in Krishna's service. And you know what Krishna will do if you do that? Do you know what Krishna will do if you do that? Ananyaschintayantomam yejana pariyapasate tesham nityapayuktanam yogache mam vaham yaham. You know the translation? Krishna says, for those who worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, I preserve what they have and I give them whatever they're lacking. So Krishna personally provides all necessities for a person who totally sells themselves out to Krishna. Prabhupada elaborated in one lecture, he said, Krishna personally delivers to your front door. It's like you can go on the internet, you know, some web page and click, 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 and then the DHL man rings your door, delivers it, you see. Very convenient now. In fact, one man called himself the dot-com man. A few years ago in Dallas, he wanted to live for a whole year without leaving the house just by the internet. It was a way to make himself famous. And he became famous by doing it. It was an interesting publicity stint he did. For a whole year, he just lived in the house and used the internet, did everything by the internet. And he lived very nicely. Dot-com man, he called him. I think it was his website was dotcomman.com. And he lived for a whole year, you know, and became famous, the dot-com man. So Krishna actually, this is dot-com man, whatever he needed, FedEx or DHL would deliver it to his door, you see. So, actually, for one who is completely sold out to Krishna, he's sitting much prettier than dot-com man. Because Krishna gives him whatever he needs to his front door. Everything comes, Prabhupada said. A devotee who is completely sold out to Krishna cannot be lacking in anything. Krishna gives him everything. Krishna can give it such a devotee the whole world, actually. Give him the whole world. Give him the whole world. So, whatever we have, the point is, if we can simply somehow or other try to engage in Krishna's service. Sometimes people say, well, you know, I have this job, I have to maintain my wife and family, and oh, they work me so hard, the hours are too long, you know, I hardly have time to sleep, what to speak of chanting 16 rounds, and you know, just it's horrible. I just don't know what to do. And I tell them, whatever time you have now that Krishna is giving you, whatever free time you have now from bodily maintenance, use it completely for Krishna. Don't spoil any of it in sense gratification. And if you do that, Krishna will give you more free time. And more free time. And more free time. In fact, I know one devotee of our movement. He's a very sincere devotee, and Krishna has given him so much facility, it's amazing. He got does this sound like a high-pressure job, a computer programmer for the City of Houston Parks and Recreation Department? It Sound like a high stress job? Anyway, yeah, it's pretty low stress. And they said, you know, he asked for what they called flex hours, where you come in late and you go home late. Some people go in early and they leave early. He said, can I come in late and go home late? They said, sure. So he does the puja, he bathes and dresses the deities of the temple. And, you know, has a nice morning program every day. He bought a house right across the street. He actually bought an empty lot across the street from the temple and built a house, half a block from the temple. So he's a pujari in the morning. He does the puja for the deities, along with a few other householders. They share it. Takes his breakfast, and after the traffic, the horrible Houston traffic jams are completely cleared out, and in a very mellow way, he just heads over to work, you know, with no traffic jam. So he got there late. Now he has to stay late. So when he around 5 or 6, all the other workers go home. He's all there, all alone. Well, till 7. So now he's got his japa time at work. He chants his rounds at work. Get paid to chant his round. Peacefully, you know, no distractions, just Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And then his rounds are done, he comes back and does, you know, takes prasadam or does some more puja in the evening. He's a very sincere, soft-hearted, wonderful devotee. And Krishna has given him so much facility to make his life very easy, you see. It's very easy for him to earn his livelihood, and he's been there for years. You know, he's huge seniority, nice pay. I think he's probably retired now. He was in that job for that's one job, his whole career in that one position. You can see why he didn't want to switch. switch jobs. His whole career he was in that position. And Krishna gave him so much nice facility to do. And he used it. And he very hospitable. He's always wanting to serve the Vaishnavas. Always wanting to serve Vaishnavas, you see. Very soft-hearted devotee of the Lord. So, in this way, even if you're in a tight spot right now, just wherever you are, use it fully for Krishna. And then Krishna is testing you, you see. If you're ever in a tight spot, you're being tested by Krishna. That's all. It's actually a tight spot is the mercy of Krishna for a devotee. He sees everything as Krishna's mercy. It is. It's all Krishna's mercy. You're in a tight spot right now. You see? See it. You have to see it as Krishna's mercy. That if I can sincerely try my best in this tight spot where it's very difficult and very intense, you see, then Krishna will say, oh, I'm testing you to see. Are you really my man? Are you willing to serve me even during adversity? Because anybody, you know, there's an old saying, you know, sunshine patriot and fair weather friend. When things are going great, you're my buddy. Or they say in Australia, you're my mate. You see? When things are going great. But when you're down, there's an old song in America from the Depression. Of course, they're thinking it's going to come back again now, the Depression. But it was an old popular song during the Depression in America. It was called, Nobody Knows You When You're Down and Out. All your friends forgot you. Now you're down and out. You're a beggar on the street. You're a derelict on the street. You were a successful businessman, and you had so many friends. Now you're a derelict on the street, and nobody knows you. You've become a complete stranger, not all your old friends. They don't want to see you, because you're down and out, you see. So a devotee, you see, he is not like that. Krishna can give him all facility. He's a devotee. Krishna can take away all facility. He's still a devotee. He remains steady and constant in his devotion through the thick, the thin, the beautiful, the ugly, the good and the bad. That's called steady. You see, he remains steady. And such a person, as he passes those tests, Krishna will give him more and more and more and more facility. So don't ever think that Krishna is cheating you or he's being unfair to you. Krishna is being very kind, even if he's testing you sometimes, your sincerity. Just remain steadfast in your devotion in all circumstances, and you'll be amazed at what will open up in your pathway. You'll be amazed at how your pathway opens up in front of you. So anyway, I can ask now if there's any questions. Yes.
As you were saying at the beginning of the class that if you make progress in Krishna consciousness, you can still take up in the next life if you didn't finish it in the first life. Is there a way to guarantee that you go back to Godhead in one lifetime?
He said that when you said in the beginning that Krishna consciousness, whatever you practice, you can go back in the next lifetime to carry on. So it's never guaranteed.
If one becomes fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, 100% purely absorbed, then you will go back in this lifetime. And if you have any material desires, Krishna is very, at the time of death, you still have some material desires, then Krishna is kind. He's saying, I'd like to take you back to Godhead, but I see you still have some material desires. I'd really like to fulfill them for you. That's Krishna's kindness. I'm a devotee, but yet I have some material desires. And Krishna says, okay, I'm not going to rush you back to Godhead. You can go ahead and take birth again and get those material desires out of your system. See, Krishna doesn't want to force you to a place where there's no material desires being fulfilled. If you still have some, he'll let you take birth again. That's his kindness.
But if he lets you take birth again to fulfill your material desires, don't you become more entangled?
You could. That's why we recommend that you should take it very seriously now. Take advantage of this process. Chant 16 rounds, follow our four letter principles, take Diksha from one of our ISKCON gurus. Get yourself completely, totally plugged in. That's a smart way to do it. What you're saying is 100% correct. There are examples of great devotees who were 99% pure and who took birth again, and they became corrupted. One devotee comes to mind, Vibha Mangala Thakur. If you know the different stages of bhakti, there's Shraddha or faith, there's Sadhusanga, there's different levels. The perfection is called prema. Bhava is the stage just before perfection, prema. This Vibha Mangala in his previous life, he had come all the way to bhava. He was just one step away from complete perfection. So he had to take birth again. Even he came all the way to the bhava stage, still he had to take birth again. And sure enough, because of his karma, he became very wealthy. Because of that, Krishna gave him very good facility because he was a devotee. He became very wealthy, but wealthy people can get diverted also. He became like a playboy, see. The prostitute girlfriend. But Krishna didn't abandon him. He was actually an initiated devotee in his previous. He was a disciple of a guru named Somagiri. So you may be shocked to hear this, but this is what actually would happen. His guru had to take birth again to save him. You know how the guru came to save him? This is really amazing. The guru came back as his prostitute girlfriend. Can you imagine? Somagiri came back as this beautiful woman named Chintamani. And there's a whole story of how one night, it was a stormy night, and his lusty desires became stimulated. He went out in this horrible storm, and the creek became a raging river by the floods. And he grabbed some log to float across the river. It turned out to be a corpse, but he didn't mind I have to see my... He was holding on to a dead body to go see Chintamani, and it didn't matter. He was so mad after this Chintamani. And then he got to her house, and the gate was locked, but he saw there was some vines. He was going to crawling up. It turned out to be snakes, big snakes. He didn't care. I have to get to see my... Finally got to her, up to her, crawled up to her window, Chintamani, Chintamani. She said, Biba Mangala, what is this nonsense? You're this lusty over a material body? This body you're so attracted to, it is simply blood and flesh. If you only had so much devotion for Krishna as you have for this blood and flesh, you'd be a pure devotee by them. And he came to his senses, you see, and he realized it. He dropped everything and went to Vrindavan and became a pure devotee. So Krishna will not let... Even if you don't... Krishna will arrange and Guru will... But don't force your spiritual master to have to take birth again as your prostitute girlfriend. I mean, why... That's a very awkward thing, you know. Ask your Guru to have illicit sex with you, you know, in the form of a woman. To save you from your lusty desires. So become a pure devotee now, in this lifetime. Mm-hmm. One should make that endeavor. Be a pure devotee.
Isn't it It depends on what kind of desires one has. Like, for example, in Bhagavatam also, Dhruva Maharaj is there, Bali Maharaj is there. They also had material desires, but Krishna fulfilled them, even though they gave up their desires, and Krishna fulfilled them.
But the thing is, Dhruva totally, once he had the darshan of Krishna Garpa, he totally gave up his material desires and became a pure devotee. He was a pure devotee before leaving the body.
But Krishna still gave him all his material desires, something that he will not get entangled in this.
That... After he gave them up.
Yes.
After he gave them up. Note that. He gave up everything else?
He gave up everything else.
You have to give up all the material desires to become a pure devotee.
But Krishna is fulfilling his material desires. He's going to be the next Indra. It's mentioned in the Bible.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Krishna may fulfill your material desires after you give them up.
Yeah.
But devotee doesn't care either way. He totally gives them up. Completely. And if Krishna sees, he's a pure devotee, then he may be fulfilled.
Remember that thief also?
Yeah, there was that thief. You know the story of that thief? He's a smart thief, in one sense. Anyway, there was a Bhagavatam class going on. He thought he would case out the joint to see if there's any pockets he could pick or something, you know, during the lecture. He kind of went and snuck into the lecture. He was looking around for a robbery to do during the lecture. But he noticed, but then he started listening to the class, you see. And the Bhagavatam preacher was saying that there's a forest near Vrindavan. This happened in India. It's a true story that Prabhupada told. Then he heard the Bhagavatam reciter was telling about that there's a little boy named Krishna who wanders all alone in the forest without any parental supervision. And he's loaded with billions of dollars of valuable jewels. So this thief, a little boy wandering alone, loaded with valuable jewels with no parental supervision? He says, I will go there and I will steal those jewels and I will become a millionaire overnight. He was very enlivened. So he hit it out for many days across India until finally he came to Vrindavan. Now the Vrindavan area is called Braj Mandal. It's a huge area. I know we go there, the other side is, from where we stay in Vrindavan town, the other side you have not seen, that is Kamyavan. Even if you go by jeep at a high speed, you know, compared to walking anyway, it takes hours to get to Kamyavan. So you can imagine walking the whole area of Vrindavan. How he was wandering that huge Braj Mandal area. Wandering. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? I want to steal those jewels. But then one day, Krishna very kindly appeared to him. Sure enough, all alone and loaded with valuable jewels. And he became very, the thief got a huge smile on his face. He said, Krishna, you're loaded with so many valuable jewels. Can you give me some? And Krishna, he played the role of being the chastised son of Mother Yasoda, always afraid of her wrath. He said, no. Mother Yasoda, she will scold me. She will chastise me. No. And that way, Krishna showed his great fear of Mother Yasoda's chastisement and refused to give even one jewel to the thief. But then the thief was insistent, Krishna, can't you give me? And this way he kept begging. But the thief became purified just by the association of Krishna. He became completely pure devotee. And Krishna said, all right, you can take. So somehow, even if you have all material desires, somehow or other, come to Krishna consciousness. And you will forget those inferior quality desires, you see. Once you understand there's nothing more sweet than the association of Krishna. To have that contact with Krishna is more valuable than any material desire you could ever be fulfilled. Even to have the post of Brahma. Just to have that association of Krishna is the greatest thing you could ever have. So any other question? Yes?
In the Bible, some of the reading I've done in the Bible over 15 years helped convince me that Krishna is Supreme Personality of Godhead. Talked about in the Bible, particularly the Song of Solomon. Does that mean that the scriptures in the Bible, where there are promises, the Christian promises in the Bible, about when you serve God, you always belong to God and He'll protect you and all of that, can we take those promises from the Bible as ours, as well as the Christians do?
I couldn't quite hear all that. If I'm understanding correctly, my deafness is not allowing me to pick up every word, especially the mucus from this sickness. But whatever is there in the Bible, which was in accordance with Vaishnava Dharma, is bona fide. Now once you understand the Vedic wisdom, you can see so many things in the Bible that even the Christians cannot see. But whatever legitimate promises are made by the Lord, either in the Bible, the Quran, or in the Gita, they're all bona fide.
Mm. Oh, guess what? You know on the phones where they've got the A, B, C, D, E, F on your numbers? If you punch in ISKCON, type in ISKCON, it comes up as...
What she said so far, let me find it exactly.
You know in the alphabet A, B, C, D, E, F...
Yeah.
Texting on the mobile phone. It has the letters on the number.
Yeah, right.
If you type in ISKCON.
Yeah.
It comes up Islam with two M's.
Really?
Yes.
That means we're going to conquer over Islam.
It means we have true Islam.
That's very good.
We have the true Islam.
Huh?
That means we are the true Islam. True
We're what?
Islam.
True Islam.
We are the true people of God.
That's right. That's the meaning of Islam anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, actually, we are going to conquer. Just like Lord Chaitanya conquered the Muslims and made them devotees, so we're going to do the same thing in due course. In due course, ISKCON will put a stop to terrorism. You see, the Home Security Department, what they will do, you know, checking for your, make sure you don't have a bottle of water in your check-in. I think they're going to stop terrorism. You see. You know, it's really funny because I carry little things of water. I always forget to do it, and I get through every time.
They allow about 3 ounces.
That's true, but they never... I don't even follow the rules. It's supposed to lay it out separately, and I just have it merged inside my vest.
I always
carry
it.
I mean...
Never lay it down.
We're not really protected except by Krishna. The Home Security Department's not protecting us. Whatever you have over here, the U.S. is the Home Security Department. They're not protecting us. It's just Krishna that's protecting us, no one else. Okay, and next question.
I think we had a class, Bhakti Vriksh class.
Mm-hmm.
We had a Bhakti Vriksh class last
yeah.
week.
Yeah.
And we had this topic about Charles Darwin's theory of evolution.
About what? Oh, Darwin.
Yeah, Darwin's
That
theory.
Monkey?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So
all right.
So we had Jignesh Prabhu did a presentation on it.
Ah.
And while discussing, we had a discussion as well. So at one point of time, during the discussion, we had this query about... How the species goes extinct from Earth, and I think in today morning program in the home program we chase the same topic.
So yeah, and I explained actually there's no such thing as extinct, never happens. They may not be visible, you know, here in North Sydney. Do you see any elephants in North Sydney?
No.
Maybe at the zoo there might. Is there a zoo in North Sydney?
Yeah, not in North Sydney.
But in somewhere. Far away from.
Yeah. No, close.
Okay.
Yeah. Close.
You may not have any elephants wandering around North Sydney, but that doesn't mean they're extinct. Just because you can't see them, you don't. How many millions and billions of planets are there throughout the whole universe? You don't know what's out there. The scientists say there's nothing out there. The life only exists here. They don't know what they're talking about. They think there's the scientists are in the dark ages. Even now, there being new species discovered all the time. There was some mountain in Indonesia where they found so many new species they didn't even know about. There are eagles that fly in outer space that the scientists hadn't even seen yet. They're so big, you know what? They swoop down and you know what they eat? Elephants. They swoop in and eat an elephant and then take off again. And when they hatch their eggs, they lay them in space. And the egg they just drop an egg in space and it hatches floating in space. A new eagle comes out floating in space. Gigantic eagles that feast on elephants. And even in our ocean, there's Timishwara, but that's... Timangila, yeah. The Timangila fish is there, and he eats whales. The scientists hadn't even discovered the Timangila fish yet. They're so proud of their technology, but there's so many things they don't even know yet. There's so many things they don't know. They don't see that actually there's no such thing as a species ever going extinct. There's always been 8,400,000 species, and there always will be 8,400,000 species. It's a fact. Roll over, Charles Darwin. You know what that means? When he's rolling over in his grave, do you hear all of these things? Oh no, I'm defeated again. He rolls over in his grave, tossing and turning in his grave. You know? Of course, it's just an example, actually. It's just his bones. He's somewhere in the jungles of Africa living as a monkey now. Okay, next question. Yeah.
Thanks for the nice class, Sri Gurudev. One of the questions we had in the previous Bhakti Vriksha is, if we get elevated to heavenly planets, what are the chances of going back to Godhead? And the discussion, we came to a conclusion that going back to Godhead is very less because there are a lot of facilities that divert.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Are there any scriptural evidences where people have gone back from a heavenly planet back home, back to Godhead?
Mm.
Are there any evidences?
Oh, I don't know. I do remember, yes, I do remember reading that how Brahma and the inhabitants of Brahmaloka can go back. That happens. But they can also fall down also. It's mentioned how the inhabit Brahmaloka and those inhabitants, they go back to Godhead from Brahmaloka. Yeah, the best thing is to take birth in the family of devotees. That's better than being the demigod in heaven. Or to be a rich person. It's much better to be, as confirmed by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he said, I would rather take birth as an insect in the house of a Vaishnava than to be a non-devotee Brahma. Because if you can be a devotee in the heavenly kingdom, then it's heaven. The best thing is to be a devotee in a devotee family. So those of you who have children, who are having children, you have to take a very grave responsibility. That some soul who most likely was a devotee, didn't finish up his business, now Krishna has given you the opportunity to help him finish his business in this lifetime and go back. So those who take up household life and having families, they have a very grave responsibility to make sure that those children who have come to them for help and protection are given all facility for achieving perfection in this lifetime. Anything else? Yeah.
In the class you mentioned that one of your god brothers is very opulent and he's building temples in Mayapur and he's spending a lot of money. And often people ask the question, what's the purpose of spending money in temples when that can be used for a welfare work? So why do we
yes.
build temples and spend money there?
Yes, they think, they say that manaseva prabhuseva. Why don't you just feed the poor? That's the best service that you can give to God. Well, it's sometimes said that you, this is a gross example, of course. It said, feed a man a fish, you can feed him for a day, but teach him how to fish, and you can feed him for a lifetime. So why do you want to just give somebody something to eat, fill up their belly, tomorrow it again become empty? Why do you simply want to solve their material problems without showing them how to get to that place? Or they will never have any more material problems. Your idea of material welfare is an inferior type of welfare. Because you're only giving them a temporary relief, which is imperfect, because they're still going to get sick. I don't care how much you feed them and give them medical treatment in your charity hospital. They're still going to get sick, they're still going to get old, and they're still going to die. You didn't solve their actual basic problems of existence. Yeah. You didn't solve their primary problems, you only solved some secondary problems, which are simply spin-offs from their primary problems. In the Krishna consciousness movement, we're saying, why treat symptoms when you can treat the cause itself? We're eliminating the primary problems, which wipes out all the subsequent problems. These temples are not just some place of religious rituals. These are scientific laboratories where you can come and, in the test tube of your own consciousness, you can perform miracles can be performed in the test tube of your own consciousness. They're not just places of religious rituals. They are these temples are actually scientific laboratories. Yes?
Those who are doing this material welfare, in actuality, in the higher sense, they are causing violence.
Really? Why is that?
Karmic reactions.
Huh?
Karmic reactions.
Karmic
reactions.
Yes. Yes. How is that?
Well, if you are taking something from somebody, you have to come to repay. So that means you have to suffer.
Let's say somebody thinks, well, I really want to do some good welfare work. I have a lot of money, you know, I made it big in the stock market. So I want to really do some good welfare work. So I'm going to open up a charity hospital. I'm going to be Mr. Good Guy, and I'm going to open a charity hospital and feed, you know, give free medical care to the poor, you see. It's called pious activity or good karma, you see. Now, good karma means you have to be rewarded for that also. So that means, here's the Mr. Good Guy, here's the result he gets for opening his charity hospital. In his next life, he gets to come back and receive free medical care from all the people that he gave it to in his previous life. Wow, isn't that great? I get to come, I gave them free medical care, now I get to come back in my next life, they will give me free medical care. Wow, how wonderful. I just went to a hospital, the best hospital in all of Pune. Was it an enlivening place? It had all the latest technology and scanners, world-class equipment. Was it a very enlivening place? I was excited to be there. No way. It's a hospital, you know. Who wants to be in a hospital? So who wants to come back and be rewarded with free medical care? The best thing is you give people Krishna consciousness. Now, if you can give them, in the Vedic culture, they are given food, they are given clothing, they are given shelter, they are given medical care. A Krishna conscious government will provide those things also for people who are in need. But those are all secondary, and that is clearly understood by everyone. The first thing is they are given education in Krishna consciousness. If that is there, then the other things can be given. It's like we distribute prasadam, you see, freely, so many people. If you simply give material welfare and no Krishna consciousness, you're not helping them, nor you're helping yourself. You give them Krishna consciousness, then they will not have to take birth again. That is the greatest welfare work. Was this question answered thoroughly? Any other questions?
There's one more question raised that I was not able to answer. I said I don't know. Vishal, Bhakta Vishal raised, he said, devotees, when they are in the spiritual world, they serve Krishna in different bhava moods. And Srila Prabhupada served Krishna. We don't know what mood he served, but when he came back to the material world, was there somebody to replace him in the spiritual world? And was his position became void? So that was the question.
Actually, a pure devotee, Prabhupada explains, using the example of Prahlad Maharaj, he can simultaneously be in the spiritual world and the material world. So just because we saw Prabhupada here doesn't mean that he abandoned his duties or his vasa, his activities of the spiritual world. A pure devotee like Prabhupada, he could easily do both things at the same time. Multitasking. Pure devotee can multitask with no problem. He can be in his rasa with Krishna in the spiritual world and simultaneously making a spiritual revolution on the earth planet. Any other questions?
In addition to chanting the Mahamantra, mm-hmm. what can we do on a daily basis that would really please Krishna? Like what can we do?
Rise early in the morning, before sunrise, take your bath and sing the Gavastikam prayers. As we do at Mangalarti. Begin your day with singing those Gavastikam prayers. And then while you're singing them, you have an altar at home? With Prabhupada, Panchatattva and Radha Krishna? Yeah. So then you offer an arti while you're singing the Gavastikam prayers. It can be a short arti. You know, do parties an incense, a flower, and you get a chamara whisk, you know. You can just do a little do party, incense, flower, and chamara for Prabhupada, Panchatattva, and Radha Krishna, and sing their Gavastikam prayers every morning. That will put you in a very good mood to chant japa very nicely. And then, so there's so many things, but that I recommend that everyone should sing the Gavastikam, because that Prabhupada gave that to us for a particular reason. It's actually stated in the Gavastikam. There is a ninth prayer also, which goes along with the eight prayers. And the ninth prayer is stated that anyone who chants these eight prayers during the Brahma Muhurta, the early morning hours before sunrise, they are guaranteed upon leaving their material body to gain the direct service of Krishna and Goloka Vrindavan upon leaving their bodies. So I recommend the Gavastikam every day. It's a special boon for those who sing Gavastikam in a pure bhakti mood every day. You get a very, very nice blessing. And whenever you can go to the temple, I encourage everyone to go to the temple for Mangalarti at 4:30. If you can, then do sing it at home. You can 10 minutes. You can finish easily the whole Gavastikam. It's a very wonderful prayers, Gavastikam prayer. Anything else?
There's just one more question raised by Dr. Jignesh. He wanted the. Where the 64 qualities of Krishna are they listed somewhere in the scriptures?
Yeah, the Nectar Devotion. In great detail. In that book, the Nectar Devotion, they're described in each quality is a very lengthy description all about it. Yeah.
With the singing of the mantras, is it important that we sing according to the correct notes, or can we improvise?
No. Now there are certain tunes that Prabhupada gave us. But it's not you're not auditioning for the Rochester School of Music. You know, when you take the Krishna consciousness. Even if you're some devotees, they can't sing, they never be able to. They're like croaking toads whenever they try to sing. Some people just don't have a musical sense. They may never get it in this lifetime. The main thing is you sing with devotion according to your best ability. There is a morning melody, which is a standard tune for Mangalarti. Na samsarada va na lalita loka tranaya karyuna gana gana dvam praptasya kalyana gunana vasya vande guru shri sadanara vindam shri vignan mahaprabho kirtananritya gita vaditra marjan manasura sena Romanshakam Pasru Charangabajo Vande Guru Sri Charanada Vindam. There are standard tunes that Prabhupada gave us. And we can try to learn those to the best of our ability. They're very conducive. They're the traditional melodies coming down from many generations of Vaishnavas. And these tunes are very, very good tunes. Very beautiful, and they're very suitable for awakening devotional feelings within the heart. Any other questions? Yeah.
You spoke about being 100% pure.
Yes.
Purity.
Yes. Yes.
Now, I know myself that I'm not 100% pure.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how do we act knowing that, knowing we're not pure? How do we act sincerely?
You've just captured it just by what you just said, actually. One has to honestly understand that I'm contaminated, and just humbly, honestly act in that capacity. I'm not a great Mahabhagavat, I'm a contaminated soul struggling with my senses. But let me honestly, sincerely try to serve the orders that I receive from Krishna, from Prabhupada, from Guru, in this way. Just honestly, it's better to be an honest sweeper in the street than a charlatan who advertises himself as a great pure devotee. You see? Actually, those who are actually pure devotees, they advertise themselves as completely fallen. If you've studied the songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he has a song called Gopinath. He says, Gopinath, mama nivedana shuno, vishayi durjana, sada kamarata, kichu nahi mora guna. My dear Lord Gopinath, I am a materialistic demon. I am full of lust. I have no good qualities. So actually, even the great pure devotees, Prabhupada himself presented himself like that. He said that, even though I'm designated Bhakti Vedanta, I have no bhakti and I have no Vedanta. I have no devotion, I have no knowledge. So, in this way, always present yourself very humbly. Even the pure devotees present themselves humbly. And then you'll be on the safe side. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Always present yourself very humbly. And even there's been a study by the Harvard Business School. There's one, it's published now. When they did a research project, many hours of research, they studied corporations that had gone from being good to being great. Who led those corporations? What was their mindset? And they called it level 5. There's one type of corporate leader who's very puffed up, I'm great, do it for me, please me, very egocentric corporate leader. He's very expert, but he's also very proud. That's called level 4. But level 5 is humble. He gives a credit to others. He always considers himself not very competent. And he gives credit to others. That's called a level 5. They found out that those corporations that went from good to great, they were all being led by level 5 people who don't advertise themselves as great. So even in the corporate world, it's been analyzed that corporate leaders who had humility, they were the greatest leaders. So to always feel that I'm imperfect, but I'm struggling to become perfect, always be in that mood, you see. That's the right mood to be in. That way you'll always remain on track. You'll always remain properly situated, advancing steadily in Krishna consciousness. Does that answer your question?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Any other questions? Yeah.
Maharaj, I had a question about deities.
Eating?
Deities.
Deities, okay.
I don't quite understand why they have different forms. Like, say, in North Sydney, they have Radha Gopinath, and then in India, they'll have Radha Rasa Bihari.
Yeah.
I don't understand why Krishna comes in these different forms or why they have different names or things like that. Could you explain a little bit?
Variety is the mother of enjoyment, they sometimes say. Actually, Krishna, too, he's the supreme enjoyer. And enjoyment means variety. So that means that Krishna has an unlimited number of names. That's one thing. Well, it's cool to have a name, see. And sometimes people have a certain nickname their friends call them, you know, and it's really, they really like that nickname, and their friends call them that nickname. Only certain people call them that name, you see. So, Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. That means he has unlimited names, he has unlimited forms, he has unlimited pastimes. You see? He has unlimited wardrobe. He has an unlimited variety of flutes. He has unlimited in everything. So that means he also appears in an unlimited variety of deity forms as well, an unlimited with unlimited variety of names. That's his enjoyment. You see. Because he's the supreme enjoyer, naturally he has unlimited types of forms and unlimited types of names. That's an increase of his enjoyment. Does that make sense?
Are all the deities still the same, or are they separate forms altogether?
They are simultaneously one and different. They are the same Krishna, manifesting himself in different varieties of forms. They are one and they are different simultaneously. Madhavendra Puri, he experienced them. He was trying to do some service for his deity. But the deity instructed him that you give the service to this other deity and through that deity I will accept your service. I forget the details, but it's described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, Krishna can accept, there's one Krishna, and he can accept loving service through any one of his deity forms. There's one internet, isn't it? But you can log on through an infinite number of access points, isn't it? So many cyber cafes, so many different wireless connections, so many different homes where they have their little cable sitting there. How many millions of spots are there where you can log into the same one internet? Different varieties. There's 3G sticks. There's, you know, all kinds of different ways you can log into that one same internet, right? So why there's one Krishna net, why you can't, there can't be an infinite number of ways to log into the Krishna net? You understand? There's the Radha Gopinath connection. You see, Radha Govinda connection, Krishna Balaram connection, Jagannath Baladev Subhadra connection. So many ways you can connect with the Krishna then, you see. Yeah.
Are there different levels of the deities that people can access? As in, is one more approachable than another?
Well, the real thing is your own purification of consciousness. It's not so much the deity. Any deity of Krishna can give you full access to Krishna. The real thing is, what is your purification of consciousness? Are you 1% pure, 2% pure, 5%, 20%, 50%, 80%? The real determining factor is, what is your degree of purification? 100% pure devotee can equally access Krishna through anything. Hare Krishna. Or even the two syllables, Krishna, you see. That's all the pure devotee, that gives him full access to Krishna directly, those two syllables. Even if there's no deities, just Krishna, that sound vibration, gives him full access to Krishna. So it's not the deity, it's you. How pure are you?
Are there some that are more approachable for the less pure?
Yes. Gornitai are especially merciful on those who are materialistic. The Jagais and Madais of this world who are full of lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy. Gornitai deities are especially good for those persons like us. And by the mercy of Gornitai, then you can access Lord Chaitanya. Radha Krishna. By their mercy. And Jagannath also is very merciful on those who are fallen, you know. Radha Krishna is more difficult to approach. One has to become qualified. Therefore, we don't recommend anybody take Radha Krishna deities at home unless your guru directly authorizes it. Don't get any Radha Krishna deities. If somebody wants deities, it's better to have Gornitai. Because but actually, for anyone who's my students, don't get any deities at all unless I give you my permission. Because deity worship is not doll worship. It's inviting a person into your home. If you have a baby, are you going to just, you know, have a nice little welcoming ceremony and neglect him for the next 20 years? Bringing a deity into your home means you're bringing a live person to live in your house with you. A live person. A living, breathing person is now living in your house with you. That is deity. So you have to feed him. You have to bathe him. You have to dress him. Regularly. Every day. So I don't recommend deity worship. The temple shop may recommend it. Because they're making profit. But don't listen to the salesman in the temple shop. Unless the spiritual master has authorized you. Better not to get deity. Just to have the photographs. That's the best thing. Deity worship is very good. If one's prepared to accept Krishna as a person and treat him like a person. It's like if you have a guest in your home, you must feed him every day. Provide him all facilities. Just like Adi Purusha Das is now accepted. His spiritual master as a guest in his home. He's given me all facilities, making sure I have proper towel, proper bedding, proper room, proper foodstuffs. He's taking all care. You see. So deity is the same thing. Can't just forget about the deity. You know, once a week I show everyone, oh, look, I have a deity. I do deity worship. I'm great. I do deity worship. You know, I offer one arti a week. And let the deity go hungry the rest of the week. You know. Maybe I gave him a little piece of sugar candy. Like many Hindus, just put a little sugar candy. If you were a guest in my home and all I gave you to eat was a little piece of sugar candy once a week, would you feel welcome in my home? Going hungry, I'm just giving you, one week you get one little piece of sugar candy. Every Sunday morning I give you one piece of sugar candy. Now don't take deity worship cheaply. Better is to have photographs. If you're really serious about deity worship, then get initiated. Get your spiritual master's blessings and instructions and follow them, you see. And then that deity verse should be very convenient and very conducive for your Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, better not to come. Anything you'd like to add about deity worship we were just discussing? Did you hear? He asked about deity worship we were discussing. You want Anything you'd like to add about that?
I don't know what you discussed.
You didn't hear. Okay. All right. Right. Yeah.
How about the deities in the temple shop? Like, they're still the deities, right? And no one is worshipping the deities in the temple shop. They're just kept as deities.
The ones in the shop itself?
Yes.
Well, that's all right. They're not installed. They're not. If you just have a deity sitting there in a shop, that's different. But if you actually take the deity home to worship the deity, and you offer an arti, you just invited Krishna to come and live in your home.
What if someone presents as a deity?
Huh?
What if someone presents as a deity?
That's the problem. People think, I'm going to give you a gift. I'm going to give you a Radha Krishna deity.
So I was given a Radha Krishna deity.
You were given?
Yeah.
You still have him?
Yes.
Give him back.
I do worship every day. I mean, I offer prasadam, bathe them.
You are?
Yeah.
Do you bathe them, dress them every day?
Yeah.
Isn't it? If you can do that standard, then it's very good. What do you do when you go to India? You take them with you?
Then, yeah.
Then your standard is good. If you can offer one arti a day or two, then you're doing good. You're doing good. But most people don't do that. If that's what you're doing, then that is very good. If you're offering two arti a day, you're bathing and dressing them every day, you're feeding them nicely, then that's first class. That's very good. How often do you get new outfits? Do you know how to sew the outfits?
She does the outfits.
Huh?
My wife does the outfits.
The wife? Then it's very good. What you're doing is very good. But most people don't do that, you see. Then what you're doing is very good. Treating him as a person. Treating them as person. Then it's very good. That's very good.
Recently, I mean, one of the devotee couple, they went to India and they gave us Bal Gopal.
Don't
one more deity.
No, don't add more deities. Don't start this whole thing of anger. I don't recommend that. In fact, Bal Gopal is not an Arsampradaya anyway. That is not an Arsampradaya, that's the Pushtimur Sampradaya. That's not our Sampradaya anyway.
So what they asked us is, they asked us to bathe him, dress him, offer him until they come back to Sydney from India.
Yeah.
For the time being.
For the time being they take care, that's okay.
All right.
But when they come, you must...
Yeah.
They have to take him then.
Sometimes the devotees, they don't want it, they do that thing.
They may be a trick. We have deity, but we don't want to do the worship. Now we're going to do a little trick. We're going to say, you're taken, and they won't. They say, now you keep them. They may try to play a trick because they don't want to do the service. You don't let them get away with it. It's not your responsibility. It's their responsibility.
But can we say no if someone
has
a deity? Can we say no? Can we?
Of course you can say no. Of course. Can always refuse. No, I don't have time. Sorry. Yes, definitely say no. I know so many people are given deities, they take them and then they commit so many offenses by neglecting the deity, and it's not practically them to do deity worship. I have disciples that beg me, Gurudev, I want to worship Jagannath. I say, okay, if you're willing to, if you promise me you'll offer Mangal Arti every day, and then you can do it, it's okay. And they say, well, I did it for 1 month, but I can't maintain it. Yeah. Unless one can maintain it for the whole life, don't take deity. A whole life of worship. Deity worship means a whole lifetime. You're a 90-year-old man doing your puja again every day. 100 years old, 95, you're still doing your puja. That's deity worship. Even to the day of your faculty, and when you're on your up to the moment when you're on your deathbed, the deity worship must go on. You see, that is deity worship. Yeah.
I was just going to say, ask if when we're fasting, do the deities fast as well, or should we feed them?
When we are fasting, do the deities fast?
No. Krishna doesn't do those austerities that we do. No. We never make the deities fat. No. They get opium and prasadam every offering. Okay, anything else?
I just wanted to mention that everybody sitting here, like all the devotees, they have helped me set up the whole house, set up the bed, set up the, clean up the house. They were helping me in the whole thing, not just me. So.
Oh, I'm so grateful to all of you.
It was a wonderful opportunity for us to serve you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You've done such nice service. The only thing we have to do is, maybe there's a way to put some pins in this cloth so when I sit down it doesn't yank down. Maybe you take take a straight pin and put it here and through the thing into the, that'll hold it for when I sit down. Because that was nice. Then as soon as I sat down, there's probably a way to pin it so it doesn't come. Or even a safety pin, that'd be even better. You could clip it in and it wouldn't come off when someone sits down on it. But no, I'm so much appreciative. This is so wonderful service you all have done. I was just amazed this morning. I had no idea. The whole crew, I think, wow, this is amazing. And that whoever you engaged to make that soup, it really picked me up because the sick body now and that soup is, had an incredible, just like a healing potency. It was wonderful.
I think Guru Mata spoke to them and
that was Guru Mata giving. Oh, she was behind the scenes on that one. All credit goes to Guru Mata. She's really, she's an amazing person, Guru Mata.
I think we have to get you some ginger and lemon tea. Like, we could do
days. Huh?
We have to get you some ginger and lemon tea.
She's trying to get. She recommends ginger and lemon tea for.
Yeah, hot teas are very good. Herbal teas taste very good. Herbal teas also, they have those like yogi tea. They make those. These types of teas are very feel very good. Hot tea, a little honey is very good. You're very good for me this week. I have different varieties of, a couple of varieties of tea. Hot herbal tea would be very good. You can put some gin. You really good? Anything else?
You said it's better to have photos instead of the deities.
Yeah, unless you can do a high standard.
So does that mean
then deity worship is very good. But if you're not on that standard, and it's going to get in the way of chanting 16 rounds, it's getting in the way of getting to your job on time, etc., then it's better to have photographs.
So does that mean photos are more merciful than the deities?
In some cases, yes, because there are what's called seva aparads. If you have actual deities and you're serving them in a neglectful way, then you get the reactions, negative reactions. But the photographs they don't give any negative reactions. So for someone who is not expert, they are more merciful, yeah. Yeah. But if someone who is super expert, who is really, really dedicated to first-class deity worship every day, I have to wake up in the morning and serve the deities, even if I went to bed late last night. You see. Just like here we are sick, coming in from India. We went to bed at 11 o'clock. We got up at 3 o'clock this morning. Because the deity worship has to be done. The sick body suffering from a mild case of pneumonia. We got up after 4 hours so I could help, do my share. Of course, the major work is done by Vishnupriya Manaji. Guru Mata is the major. She does everything. We just help a little bit. But still, we have to do our share to help. Any other question? All right, so we'll stop here. We thank you all very much for your participation in this wonderful, wonderful movement of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta, the Dandi, Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.